The Hutt consulate on Coruscant was chaotic. Turmoil had been the order of the day since the Holonet had broken the story that Nal Hutta had made a separate peace with the Yuuzhan Vong, and that the Hutts were severing diplomatic relations with the New Republic. Soon, in any case, Coruscant would be nothing more than an unpleasant memory. And Golga, Nal Hutta's envoy to the New Republic, would be on his way to diplomatic duties elsewhere in the galaxy. Worries of a posting on Tatooine assailed him, but they were interrupted by the arrival of his Twi'lek secretary.
Highness, New Republic Senator Shesh requests an audience.
Now?
Golga said incredulously.
Doesn't Senator Shesh realize that I'm preparing to depart?
She does, Highness. But she asserts that it is vital that she speak with you beforehand. She asserts further that you will be passing up a unique opportunity should you elect not to grant her audience.
A unique opportunity indeed. Is this Senator Vicky Shesh of Kuat?
Yes, Highness.
Golga grimaced in derision.
Show her in.
The Twi'lek bowed graciously and left the chambers. When he returned a moment later, he was accompanied by a comely, dark-haired human female. Golga arranged himself on the couch and motioned Shesh to a chair.
Never let it be said,
he began in basic when his secretary had exited,
that Golga Besadi Fear is one to allow unique opportunities to pass him by.
Shesh smiled with purpose.
I'm glad to hear that, Consul Golga. It simplifies matters.
Golga licked his lips.
As you may or may not know, recent information has come to light concerning the suspension of spice deliveries to Tina, Borthwi, and Corellia. Given the Hutt's alliance with the enemy, members of the intelligence community had to ask themselves whether the suspension of deliveries was perhaps a cloaked message from Borga, a way for her to reveal the intentions of the Yuuzhan Vong to attack those systems without actually saying as much.
Golga grappled with what he was hearing.
I'm listening, Senator.
Or,
Shesh held up a meticulously manicured forefinger,
whether the Yuuzhan Vong would merely like us to think that those systems are in danger, while they devise an entirely different attack.
She gave Golga a moment to ponder, then continued.
You see, the Senate and the Defense Force are very divided on just this issue. With New Republic fleets widely dispersed to protect the core worlds, a decision has to be reached on whether additional ships should be deployed at Borthwi or Corellia.
Golga laughed.
Senator, I haven't the slightest idea what the Yuuzhan Vong plan to do next. Furthermore, it is ludicrous to assume that Borga has been made privy to their plans.
Shesh leaned forward.
You can assure me of that?
I can. Everyone has attached too much import to this so-called alliance.
Shesh's eyes narrowed in thought. Finally, she said,
I want you to deliver a message to Borga, Consul. Tell her that while the fleets are deployed elsewhere, the New Republic would like nothing more than to see the Yuuzhan Vong attack Corellia. They have a surprise in store, including a big, shiny toy that could spell trouble for your new overlords. But tell her also that this information is offered as a means of redressing an earlier wrong. Borga won't understand, but there are those who will.
Golga stared at her.
If I didn't know better,
he said at last,
I would be tempted to surmise that you are supplying me with intelligence that would be of great value to the Yuuzhan Vong.
Shesh shrugged.
Think what you will.
Nevertheless, how do I know that this isn't simply disinformation, designed to make the Hutts look like fools?
Shesh said nothing.
Whichever the case, Senator, this is most unexpected.
Shesh's smile was enigmatic.
Who knows, Consul? Someday we might be working together. To that possible end, I think we're off to a good start.
In Rin City's dormitory, with all 37 Rin gathered around them and waiting breathlessly, the two humans, tall and short, appraised the completed letters of transit. The stuffy air of the dormitory was so tense that when Tall finally pronounced the letters perfect, it was as if fireworks had gone off. The humans waited for the Rin to calm down. Displaying one of the pieces of Durasheet, Tall showed Gaff an appreciative look.
I see you've already listed yourselves.
Gaff puffed out his chest in theatrical pride.
That's because we knew you would find them impeccable.
Tall nodded and handed all the letters to Short, who placed them inside a beat-up alloy case.
We'll submit everything to Salich AG later this morning. Assuming everything goes as planned, you should be prepared to leave on the day after tomorrow. How's that sound?
Melisma could hardly believe their good fortune. In 2 days, they would be headed clear around the core to Abrogado Ray. Apparently in dire need of beauty sleep, Rhonda hadn't asked for the Rin as expected. By Skidder's reckoning, 2 standard days had passed before the hut summoned them. Later that same day, however, Skidder was delighted to find the 6 Rin already in the Yamask tank when he and the other captives were led into the hold. The session began as usual, with the captives lulling the creature into a state of tactile elation through caresses and massage. Skidder threw Saffa a quick glance and spoke under his breath.
You met with Rhonda?
She gave him the faintest of nods.
We just finished with him.
You did as I asked?
Duggan stopped at her judgment. But yes, we did as you asked.
How did he react?
With palpable concern. He dismissed us almost immediately, probably to confer with his bodyguards and advisors.
Skidder's eyes narrowed in covert pleasure. The moment had come to talk to the Yamask. The goal was to convey through images that Rhonda Vissati Diori was plotting against Commander Qin Kao. Immediately, the tentacle, draped almost tenderly across his shoulders, began to twitch, then tremble. Then, all at once, the appendage tightened its hold on him. At the same time, and throughout the tank, the tentacles fastened to other captives dropped away. Skidder instantly broke mental contact and ducked out from under the tentacle's grip, but that only prompted the creature to twist toward him as if to fix him in its gaze. Skidder, Roa, Saffa, and some of the others had the foresight to submerge themselves in the nutrient, but a dozen others were hurled clear out of the tank by the Yamask's counterclockwise whirl. Fazgo was among the latter group, and he was hurled with bone-breaking force into the Yorick coral bulkhead, where he stuck fast for a moment, then began a slow tumble down the scabrous surface to the floor. Some of the longer tentacles made a sudden grab for Skidder as he resurfaced, but he back-somersaulted out of the liquid and onto the rim walkway. The tentacles flailed and slapped against the coral grating, but Skidder deftly avoided them. Qin Kao and the guards raced around the tank, convinced for the moment that Skidder was the victim rather than the instigator.
It tried to kill me! It wants to kill me!
The Jedi shrieked. Many of the captives flung outside by the creature's abrupt spin were picking themselves up from the deck, dazed but not seriously hurt, except for Fazgo, who was sprawled lifelessly in an expanding pool of blood. Qin Kao seemed wary as he approached the Yamask. Seeing, or perhaps sensing, the commander's approach, the Yamask extended 2 tentacles to him, then a third, which the Yamask curled around Qin Kao's neck. The commander's eyes rolled up in his head. Then, blinking back to consciousness, he turned and stared wide-eyed at Skidder. The words that flew from Qin Kao were the last thing Skidder expected to hear.
A Jedi!
On a purely objective level, battles in space had a savage beauty, an incendiary splendor. Along with fiery and coherent light, there was the black velvet tableau of stars, planets, moons, and ships, flusters flaring, burnished by starlight, reduced to fleeting comets, twirling and pirouetting in a slow pyrotechnic ballet of death. The Battle of Tina was no exception. The planet fell quickly to Yuuzhang Vong forces. And assured of victory, priests had performed the rituals for removing from its creche aboard the Yuuzhang Vong warship Yangka an enormous dedicated villet Commander Nashchoka had brought with him from the outer rim of the galaxy. By the time Commanders Nashchoka and Malik Kar returned to the Yangka from their visit to the embattled planet's surface, the villet had been relocated to ceremonial surroundings in a hold cleared of everyone but the most exalted of the priests. Below the large dedicated villip sat the transmitting villips, consciousness joined to Nashchoka and Malik Kar, who genuflected reverently before the towering communicator.
With loud sucking noises, the villip turned completely inside out and assumed the features of War Master Tsavong La.
"Behold your leader,"
Tsavong La's villip told the commanders. "War Master," the two said as they lifted their eyes. The eyes of the facsimile fixed on Nazchoka.
"Inform me of recent events, Supreme Commander."
Nazchoka said,
"We occupy the world called Tina, Potent One, which fell to us with so meager a fight we might have deemed it unworthy were it not so well suited to our needs and our campaign."
The eyes moved to Malik Kaar.
"I would hear more of this."
"Tina is but the first stage of a strategy that will speed us to the core. To guarantee this, we entered into an agreement with the Huts, the terms of which require that we apprise them of planetary systems to avoid in the dispersal of a ludicrous product called spice. We did so in complete expectation that they would either alert the New Republic, or that New Republic analysts would discover that spice was moving freely in some sectors and not at all in others, and leap to the conclusion that the latter provided a glimpse of our battle plan. Tina was one of the worlds we cautioned the Huts to avoid, along with Corellia and Botovie. Tina was deliberately won as a means of fortifying the disinformation." The villip was silent for a long moment.
"The meager battle you waged suggests that the New Republic failed to behave as predicted. Otherwise, their fleet would have been lying in wait."
"Testimony to the New Republic's notion of cleverness, War Master,"
Nazchoka answered.
"To have met us in force might have saved the day for Tina, but the New Republic is well aware that we have targets of greater significance in mind. So they purposely gave Tina away." "With tribute to Commander Malik Kaar,"
Choker continued,
"I am now convinced that the same tactic will work for the planned assault. Many Coral Skipper pilots are readying themselves for the sacrifice the attack will require. And we will soon begin positioning autonomous Dovan Basals along the routes New Republic ships will use in jumping to the target once they learn the truth."
"Then these Huts alerted the New Republic?"
"I deem it of little consequence either way, Potent One. As a bonus, the Huts will make for bountiful sacrifices when we are finished with them."
The facsimile's eyes closed for a moment.
"I'm not fully swayed. Even if your assumption is correct, that the New Republic is now convinced that we mean to assail either Corellia or Botovie, surely they have sufficient ships to safeguard both worlds."
"They do, War Master," Malik Kaar said. "Although Corellia remains relatively unprotected, while Botovie enjoys the protection of a large flotilla."
"The New Republic cares so little for Corellia."
Nazchoka smiled faintly.
"They wish us to think so, Potent One."
"It has been our hope all along to maneuver them into fortifying only one of those worlds," Malik Kaar explained. "And the gods have favored us by providing help from an unexpected quarter. A New Republic senator informed the Huts that Corellia conceals a trap of some sort."
"A deceit."
"Your pardon, War Master. But we have some reason to trust this human being. She may well be the same person who thought she was helping us by apprising our agents that the Priestess Elan had defected."
"Then you already know the identity of this betrayer?"
"Her name is Vicky Shesh, Potent One."
"This bodes well,"
Tsavong La's villip aloud.
"But delay any contact with her until your strategy is successfully executed. She may be of greater use to us once we are closer to the core. I leave the rest to you."
"Your will be done, Potent One,"
the commanders said in unison. Commodore Brand tried not to be distracted by the traffic that gushed horizontally and vertically past the transparisteel wall of the Advisory Council chambers.
or by the cityscape itself, ignited to flickering splendor as that part of Coruscant turned away from the sun. Seated with their backs to the window wall were Chief of State Boris Kfelia and the 8 members that made up his council. Kfelia commenced to count the vote.
Frey, Ormas, Tryback, and Dravad in favor of sending troops to defend Corellia. Myself, Rodan, Nuv, and Navik in favor of Botoi.
Everyone looked at the council's 9th and newest member.
I'm afraid the decision falls to you, Senator Shesh, Kfelia said.
Commodore Brand waited expectantly.
Even with the evidence of Tina to support a possible threat to Corellia, an attack on the Core makes no sense strategically. If the Yuuzhang Vong were going to launch an offensive so far from their present stronghold in hot space, why would they waste valuable resources engaging a system we essentially stripped of defenses after the Center Point Station crisis, rather than strike at a more appropriate target like Kuat or Brental? No, I say all things point to an attack on Botawi, from hot space and now from Tina. I stand with Chief of State Kfelia.
Kfelia breathed a long sigh of relief.
I commend your flawless reasoning, Senator Shesh.
He smiled ruefully at Commodore Brand.
The matter is resolved. Assemble your task force, Commodore, but steer it to Botawi.
With the Falcon safely docked, Han and Droma cleared Wuhan customs and hastened for the spaceport terminal. If not for the crowds, they might have sprinted. At a human-staffed information booth, Han and Droma discovered listings for over 100 separate exile facilities.
Searching every camp will take longer than we've got, Han fumed. There's gotta be an easier way.
Try the central data bank, a droid voice said behind him. Whoever you're looking for might be listed there.
Han turned and found himself face-to-face with an aged droid, built roughly along human lines, with a rounded head that was as primitive in design as the servo motors that operated its limbs. The droid directed them to a computer terminal, and Han typed RIN in the search by species field.
There we are, Droma said, pointing at the screen. Just where we usually show up, between Rybet and Sadal. And my clanmates are here!
He turned excitedly to Han.
Well, 5 of them at any rate.
Your sister with them?
Droma read over the list again, then shook his head.
Safa must have been left behind on Shindine.
Han made his lips a thin line.
We'll find her next. Where are the others?
Facility 17, along with 32 other in.
Han swung to the droid. What's the quickest way there?
Oh dear,
exclaimed the droid. Now hardwired into a columnar data bank, the droid returned to accessing information.
From what I can ascertain, the droid updated a moment later, the Rin are accused of having forged documents of transit that permitted several hundred exiles, including all 37 Rin who were housed at Facility 17, to depart Ruan aboard a commercial freighter.
Depart?
Droma looked puzzled.
Then they're obviously not at Facility 17.
Han shook his head.
We got here too late.
Han ran his hand down his face. Then he turned to the droid.
See if you can get the name of the ship.
The vessel is called the Trevi,
the droid announced as if reading from a display screen, when in fact the data was going straight into his neural processor.
It has a Narshada registry.
Han groaned, then tightened his lips in negation.
Why would Salich care about a group of refugees traveling on forged documents? He asked at last. The whole idea is to get everyone relocated, right?
The droid divided his attention between Han and the rapid flow of data.
Therein are accused of conspiracy in addition to forgery. It seems that the captain and crew of the Trevi are themselves suspected of fraud. In recent months, instead of discharging their obligations to provide safe passage to other worlds, they have been known to abandon their passengers at destinations other than those promised.
See if the Trevi filed a flight plan with Ruan Control.
The droid set himself to the task.
Yes, here we are, he said, photoreceptors brightening. The Trevi launched for Abrigado Ray. But that's odd.
What? What's odd?
A notation appended to the flight plan states that the Trevi's actual hyperspace jump was better suited to a destination rimward of Abrogado Ray, along the Rimmer trade route. That destination is the very place of my activation, Fonnor.
The name practically screamed to Han. An industrial planet in the system of the same name, Fondor was famous for its huge orbital construction facilities. During the rebellion, Fondor's shipyards had turned out several superclass star destroyers. Han turned to Droma.
Fondor is where we'll find your clanmates.
In imperious repose on her cushioned and pillowed pallet, Borga Vesari Diori fixed her gaze on Supreme Commander Nazchoka as her majordomo Linek escorted him into the palace court. Trailing Choka, and similarly attired in attenuating helmet and swishing command cloak, stepped Malik Kar, and behind him, Nom Anor, posing as the New Republic traitor Pedrick Cuff.
"I welcome you to Nalhata," Borga said to Choka. "We are at your disposal."
Choka smiled in surprise.
"Excellent. I'm not one to mince words, Borga. With respect to your gracious offer to oversee the transport of captives, I have determined that such services are unwarranted at this stage of our campaign. As a gesture of good faith, however, we will continue, as we see fit, to furnish you with some advance notice of our activities."
He paused momentarily.
"For example, you may resume delivery of your spies to the Bothoe system without fear of inadvertent entanglement."
Borga licked her lips.
"We thank you, and I'm sure the Bothans will do likewise."
Choka studied her for a moment.
"For the spies, you mean?"
"Precisely, for the spies."
Choka's expression didn't change.
"Trust, Borga, that you're not sharing this privileged information with any third parties."
Borga spread her smallish hands, palms outward.
"With whom would I share? Our primary concern is to maintain trade, and of course, to avoid complicating your business, whatever that may be."
"That's comforting to hear," Choka said. "Be advised that should evidence ever come to light that you have been violating our confidence, well, I don't think I need to enumerate the horrors that would befall Hutt space, do I?"
Borga shook her head.
"We Hutts are renowned for our vivid imaginations."
"Splendid."
Choka smiled with sincerity.
"We Yuzhong Vong prize obeisance above almost anything but valor. Speaking of valor, have the Hutts had many dealings with this gang of ruffians that calls itself the Jedi Knights?"
Borga adopted a look of distaste.
"Some, Excellency. In fact, before you deigned to grace this galaxy with your presence, the Jedi were making things rather irksome for us by interfering with our operations."
"Yes," Choka mused. "They have proved troublesome for us as well. We've had a few Jedi in our grip, but they have all managed to slip through our fingers."
He regarded Borga for a long moment.
"You would profit by assisting us in separating one from the pack."
Borga fell silent, wondering if she was being tested, but ultimately deciding that Choka's offer was genuine.
"But, Excellency, you have one in your possession even now," she said cautiously.
It was Choka's turn to fall silent. He turned a glance at Malik Kar, then Nom Anor, both of whom returned nescient shrugs.
"Explain yourself, Borga."
"The vessel aboard which my son Randa is currently a guest," Borga supplied. "Randa sent word that a Jedi had been discovered among the ship's captives."
Once more Choka looked to Malik Kar, who said,
"I know nothing of this."
"To which ship does the Hutt refer?"
Choka demanded of his advisors in the Yuzhong Vong.
"The Kreish, Supreme Commander,"
a bare-headed Yuzhong Vong answered.
"The Yamosk vessel, under the command of Jin Gao."
"I warn you,"
Pazda was telling Borga shortly after the Yuzhong Vong had left the court. The gray-bearded Desilijic Hutt brought his hover sled closer to Borga's levitated pallet.
"Any dealings with these heathens will come to a dreadful end.
From her pallet, Borga watched Krev Bambesa, Gardula the Younger, and former Consul General Golga nod in agreement, and said,
"I myself sensed as much, though I confess I thought we'd be able to remain neutral for a while longer."
Pazda loosed a scornful sound.
"The Huzhong Vong do not suffer safe middle ground. They will have things their way or not at all. Before long, there will be nothing counterfeit about the obeisance we show them."
Golga looked from Pazda to Borga.
"Short of going to war, what can be done?"
Borga interlocked her fingers in patent disquiet.
"What was it Senator Vikishesh told you regarding New Republic battle contingencies?"
"She intimated that the Senate and the military were convinced that the Yuzhong Vong would strike next at either Corellia or Botawi," Golga said. "However, the message I was to deliver to you was that the New Republic hopes to see Corellia attacked, where they evidently have a surprise in store. Senator Shesh also wanted it known that the information was a gift to rectify an earlier wrong, as I recall. Obviously, the New Republic was trusting that the Yuzhong Vong would call her bluff."
"I relayed as much to Malik Kar," Borga said pensively. "And it now appears that Choka has taken the bait. But I begin to wonder who is using whom. If Choka is keen on using us to send a false message to the New Republic, he does so by deliberately putting our spy ships at risk at Botawi. And if that is indeed the case, he is obviously prepared for the eventuality that we will declare war." "You see," Pazda said, "there is no middle ground."
Borga turned to the ample Krev Bombesa.
"Triple our usual spice shipments to the Bothan worlds. Let's be certain we send a clear message to the New Republic that Corellia is the target."
Borga looked at Krev Bombesa.
"Contact your friend Talancard. Perhaps the Jedi will be interested in learning the whereabouts of one of their missing Jedi."
"I had to see for myself,"
Randa Basadi Diori said, using his mighty tail to move himself to the edge of the inhibition field two Dovan Basils had fashioned aboard the creche.
"Ah, but of course there's no way to identify a Jedi by appearance alone. Consider Luke Skywalker, for example. Looking at him, who would guess he possesses the power he does?"
Under the vigilant gaze of several Yuzhong Vong guards, Randa sidled closer still until he was practically belly to nose with the battered human imprisoned within the force field.
"So, are you in fact who Jinkal says you are? Or should I say, who his war coordinator says you are?"
Worth Skidder's split upper lip curled.
"What do you want, Randa? Or have you just come here to gloat?"
"Gloat? Surely not, Jedi. Rather, I've come to offer my sympathies, not only for what Jinkal has planned for you, but for what the Yuzhong Vong have planned for the New Republic."
"I suppose we should all follow your parents' lead and roll over. Is that the idea?"
Randa feigned weariness.
"We all serve someone, Jedi, even you."
Skitter's eyes, nearly swollen shut, managed to narrow slightly.
"How long do you think the Yuzhong Vong are going to tolerate your illicit ventures?"
Randa grinned.
"My sense of the Yuzhong Vong is that they have more tolerance for outlaws than they do for followers of the Force."
"Your mother would be proud of you, Randa."
"Your mother?"
Jinkal interrupted as he stormed into the hold.
"I succeeded in spoiling my surprise."
Perplexed, Randa pivoted to the commander.
"Actually, I have you to blame, Randa,"
Jinkal said when he reached the inhibition field.
"You told Borga that I'd managed to flush out a Jedi, and in turn, Borga told my immediate superiors, who now wish to deprive me of the honor of presenting this one," he gestured to Skidder, "to my superior's superior."
Randa's eyes grew wide.
"You mean that he is to be removed from the ship?"
"Presently."
"But what of your plans to use him to tutor the Yamask in the ways of the Force?"
Jinkal shrugged.
"I will propose as much, and who knows, this one may yet return to my care. In the meantime, I'm certain that Supreme Commander Choka will find other uses for him."
Jinkal turned and headed for the passageway.
Finish your business with him, Randa, he added without turning around. It's unlikely you will see him again. Randa watched the commander leave the hold. Then he pressed himself as close to the inhibition field as possible.
They're planning to betray me, he whispered harshly. To subject me to the Yamosk as they did with you. Help me, Jedi. Save me from them. And I will do anything you ask of me.
Talk about ragtag outfits, Shada Dukal said, as 13 X-Wings, A-Wings, and modified Y-Wings, many of them as patched up as a pirate craft, pierced the MagCon field of Kothless II orbital station's aft docking bay. Talon Card and the former Mistral Shadow Guard from Emberlyn watched from an observation gallery that overlooked the bay.
A pity you never got to see Kip's squadron a year ago, Card said. Back then, they had 2 XJs fresh from Incom, along with a couple of B-Wings in near immaculate condition.
Shada kept her eyes on the starfighters.
So I've heard.
Kip named them the Dozen and Two Avengers, much to Skywalker's dismay. Kip sicked them on the Outer Rim, detaining pirates and smugglers, and generally sticking his nose wherever he wanted. Then he lost everyone at Helska. It was the first engagement between starfighters and Yuuzhan Vong Coral skippers. They didn't have a clue what they were up against. Now Kip's formed a new unit, comprised mostly of combat veterans from one Yuuzhan Vong conflict or another. Kip proposed that everyone would do better if they formed an actual unit, and at the same time, he'd have his Avengers back. As an appeasement to Skywalker and the military, he dropped the name Avengers. Now they're just Kip's Dozen.
He looked at Shada.
Let's go say hello.
By the time Card and Shada arrived in the hold, Kip, Ganna Rizod, and the 12 members of Kip's squadron were huddled near the modified Y-Wing co-piloted by Ganna. Seeing Card and Shada, the two Jedi walked toward them.
One heck of a place for a rendezvous, Card, Kip said. Half the 5th Fleet is parked between here and Buthawee. We're lucky we were even cleared for Kothless, never mind this place.
I didn't want to trust what I have to say to normal channels, Card explained. As for the fleet, the Bothans aren't taking any chances, even though conditions have changed since our visit to Ryloth.
Changed? How? Kip asked conspiratorially.
Card nodded his head toward the observation gallery.
Step into my office for a moment.
Kip signaled his flyers to remain with the ships. Then he and Ganner followed Card and Shada to a turbo lift that accessed the overlook. No one spoke until they arrived on the gallery. Card began.
A rescue mission's off-limits to Jedi.
I ask only because I don't want to be responsible for widening the rift between you and Skywalker.
There is no rift, Kip said firmly. We don't see eye to eye on some things, but there's no rift. He approved my coming here.
Card's eyes narrowed as he assessed Duron. Is Worth Skidder still missing?
Ganner suddenly leaned forward.
Yes.
No other Jedi?
What have you heard, Card? Kip demanded.
This comes direct from Krev Bombesa, so I'm trusting that it's reliable information. Yuuzhan Vong forces are holding a Jedi aboard a ship carrying a war coordinator. So there's a good chance it's either well-armed or traveling under escort.
Ganner tightened his lips and nodded.
Thanks for bringing this to us, Card.
Card got to his feet.
You're certain Skywalker won't object?
Kip gave his head a shake.
Rescue is our mandate.
Several thousand demonstrators railed from behind the majestic gates that had once allowed Governor General Marcha of Mastagophorus to maintain a tranquil enclave for herself on that part of Dral. From a round-topped window in the sitting room that overlooked the estate's expansive front lawn, Jason trained electro-binoculars on some of the placards and signs hoisted high by the vociferous crowd.
Jedi warmongers, he read aloud.
He swung to his younger brother.
Oh, here's one you'll like, Anakin. Solos go home.
I don't know how word got out that you boys would be stopping here before continuing on to Centerpoint Station.
Marcha said as she served pieces of rishcate, heavy with Vuelnu nuts.
Furred and somewhat chubby bipeds, Marcia and her nephew Ebrahim had clawed feet, elongated whiskered muzzles, and small ears set high on their heads. Like most drow, they were keenly intelligent and honest to a fault, if at times maddeningly fastidious. But where age had tempered Ebrahim's tendency to pontificate, Marcia, while some years Ebrahim's senior, was as fervently self-reliant as Jason remembered her being during the Centerpoint Station crisis almost 8 years earlier. What had begun then as a family holiday had turned into open rebellion, with the Sikorian Triad making use of Centerpoint Station's awesome interdiction and Nova-inducing power to force the New Republic into recognizing the Sector's autonomy. Ebrahim, hired by Leia to tutor Jason, Jaina, and Anakin, had ended up being their rescuer by spiriting them from Corellia to Dral, where Marcia had not only sheltered them, but had also led them to the planetary repulsor Anakin activated to thwart the Triad's plan.
"I fear you haven't been given all the facts, Anakin," the one-time tutor said. "You're under the impression that you've been summoned to aid in Corellia's defense, when in fact re-enabling Centerpoint Station has more to do with offense than defense."
"I knew it would be something like this," Jason blurted. Anakin turned to Ebrahim. "Is there proof the New Republic plans to use Centerpoint as a weapon instead of a shield?"
Ebrahim mulled over his response.
"The problem, as I see it, is that Centerpoint has the capacity to be both. Even if used as a shield today, there's no guarantee it won't be used as a weapon tomorrow. But that inherent duality isn't the reason for the protests. The cause runs deeper than that."
"How much do you remember about what the Triad attempted to do during the crisis?"
Marcia asked. "Actually, I don't remember all that much," Anakin confessed. "I know they used Centerpoint to create a system-wide interdiction field, capable of trapping hostages and repelling rescue attempts at the same time."
Ebrahim nodded.
"We strongly suspect that the New Republic will attempt to do the very same thing. You see, this operation isn't about using Centerpoint to safeguard Corellia. It's about using the station to ensnare the Yuuzhan Vong fleet, and utilizing this system as a battle arena."
"Oh, brother," Jason groaned. "No wonder Corellia's ready to riot."
Anakin grew pensive, then looked at Marcia.
"You make it sound like everything is already set. It doesn't sound like I'm really needed here."
Marcia smiled faintly.
"I wish that were so, but in fact, the success of the strategy rests very much with you."
Ebrahim explained.
"The Defense Force has had their best people working non-stop to bring the entire network online. But the scientists have not yet been able to realize their ambitions,"
Marcia said.
"And this is where you and you alone figure in the scheme, Anakin. Because many of the scientists are convinced that the system still bears the imprint you imparted to the repulsor here on Dral. And that such a network can be brought into synchronization only by you."
Centerpoint Station hung gray-white and ominous between Talus and Trollus, drawing its power from the gravitic output of the so-called double worlds. Since arriving on station, Anakin had grown accustomed to being the focus of intense scrutiny. But the gray-haired man who muscled his way through the control room crowd set him back on his heels. With the beard that Han had been growing the last time Anakin saw him, the man looked more like Han than Han himself, if a few centimeters taller and more thickly built.
"You're Jason, and you're Anakin," he said, pointing to each in turn. Mostly to Anakin, he added, "You don't remember me, do you? I'm hurt. I'll bet that even your droid remembers."
"You were responsible for confining Master Ebrahim and Masters Anakin and Jason within a force field on Dral," Ebrahim's droid Q-9 supplied, "whereas I was responsible for releasing them."
The man planted his hands on his hips and laughed heartily.
"I'd forgotten all about that."
"You're Thrakken Sal Solo," Anakin said at last. "Dad's first cousin."
Thrakken shook his head in amusement.
"It's a marvelous irony that it took a galactic war to bring you boys back to the station you originally helped to shut down. Are you here on a tour, or are you really willing to do what's necessary to safeguard Corellia from attack?"
Anakin considered it. That depends on what you have planned for Centerpoint. Thrakken adopted a look of puzzlement.
What we have planned is an interdiction field. What else could we hope for? The station is too unstable right now to use as a weapon.
Thrakken looked to a pale, thin-faced technician.
This is Antone, he said. He was also here during the crisis. In fact, he had family at Bovo Yeagan, the star that would have been destroyed if you hadn't intervened in time.
I believe that only Anakin can help us, Antone said nervously. As a result of his activation of the draw repulsor, the entire system imprinted on him.
He looked at Anakin.
On your fingerprints, your DNA, perhaps even your brainwaves. I've been proposing this for 8 years now, but no one was interested in having you return here until now.
There's only one way to find out if Antone's theory merits further investigation, Thrakken said.
He gestured toward what was obviously a special console.
Take the controls, Anakin. Let's see where it goes from there.
Jason and Ebrahim threw Anakin troubled looks, to which Anakin responded with a nod meant to be mollifying. But even as he moved toward the console with every tech watching, Anakin could feel the system beginning to respond to him. Hesitantly, he placed his hands on the console. A tone sounded, and a flat spot on the panel began to twist and shimmer, then swell upward, forming itself into a handle like a spacecraft's joystick. When Anakin reached for it, the handle reshaped itself to fit his left hand, and everyone in the room, even Jason, gasped. Unexpectedly, a graphic display appeared in the air over the handle, a hollow wireframe cube made up of smaller transparent cubes, five high, five across, and five deep. As Anakin manipulated the joystick, the grid of smaller cubes began to take on color, greens and purple, to the accompaniment of activation tones. Everyone but Thrakken was speechless.
You've done it, boy, you've done it, he enthused.
Anakin moved the control stick forward, and a cube of blazing orange appeared. He experimented with minute adjustments that made the cube flicker or brighten. Then he pulled the stick down as hard as he could. Indicators registered an incredible burst of power, and the control room began to shudder.
The station is reorienting, a technician reported. It's armed, Anton exclaimed in awe. It's capable of firing.
A dozen separate conversations broke out in the control room, silenced only by the arrival of the New Republic officer in command of the project.
An urgent message from Kominar, the colonel announced to Sal Solo and Antone. Yu Zhongvang advanced elements are departing Hutt space. Fleet intelligence estimates 36 standard hours until they're at our doorstep.
In groups of three and four, at a time escorted by gunboats and squadrons of vintage X-Wings, the warships of the Hapen fleet reverted to real space over the planet Kominar on the rimward edge of the core. Gazing at the assembled armada from the shuttle that was conveying her and Isolde from the prince's ship, the Song of War, to Commodore Brand's flagship, the Yald, Leia felt as if she and everyone she held dear were trapped in the current of a tumultuous river that was sweeping them into unknown regions. The feeling had accompanied her from Hapes, troubling her through all the long hours of talk with Isolde, who was seemingly as enthralled by the prospect of going to war with the Yu Zhongvang as he had been by the chance to trade punches and kicks with Bede Thane.
What power we have marshaled, Isolde said from the shuttle's passenger cabin window. I doubt that even the Yu Zhongvang would fail to be impressed.
Oh, they'd be impressed, Leia said. But instead of phasing them, a display like this would only goad them on.
Welcome aboard, Prince Isolde,
Brand said, stepping forward and extending his hand. Isolde took hold of Brand's hand, nearly crushing it in his grip, Leia was sure.
Good to be here, Commodore.
Brand smiled as he turned to Leia.
Ambassador Organa Sola, welcome home. And on behalf of the New Republic, thank you for all you've done.
Leia inclined her head in a courtly bow.
Thank Prince Isolde, Commodore. He was very persuasive in winning over the consortium.
Brand nodded stiffly.
Prince Isolde, your support might very well stem the tide.
Just tell me where to direct my forces, Commodore.
The command staffs of both groups moved to the Tactical Information Center deeper in the ship. Dozens of officers and technicians were already gathered in the TIC. Once Isolde, Leia, and the rest of the new arrivals were seated, Brand came right to the point. The enemy is massing for a strike, and judging from the number of ships involved, they have their sights set on a target of greater significance than Ithor or Jindyne. We have determined that target to be Corellia, which we have deliberately left inadequately protected in the hope of inviting an attack. Leia's eyes widened in alarm as a holographic image of Center Point Station resolved above the projector. Center Point Station is at the heart of Corellia's defense, Brand went on. When the Yuuzhan'vong fleet emerges from hyperspace in the Corellia system, an interdiction field that will be created by Center Point Station will rob them of the ability to go to light speed and will essentially hold them fast. That is when many of the warships anchored here and at Kuat and Bothui, all of which have been retrofitted with hyperwave inertial momentum sustainers, will launch, penetrating the interdiction field to engage the enemy.
Commodore, Leia interrupted.
Brand turned to her and nodded. Yes, Ambassador. Your sons are already aboard Centerpoint. Fixed in place by a dollop of organic adhesive, Worth Skidder tracked Qin Kao as the commander completed his second circle around him. Concentric to Qin Kao's circuit stood a dozen guards armed with amphistaffs and other weapons.
I'm surprised that your powers don't allow you to break free of our Blorash jelly,
Qin Kao mused, as he glanced at Skidder's immobilized feet.
Perhaps you're not as powerful as we think you are.
In a flash of anger, Skidder drew on the force to create a vacuum around the Yuuzhan'vong's head.
Qin Kao gasped and his hands flew to his throat.
Very good,
he rasped when the force bubble dissipated.
Very good.
He breathed deeply.
Since you and our Yamosk already have a relationship, I'll have to think of a different method of breaking you.
But you will be broken in the end.
He fell silent for a moment. But before he could utter another word, the ship was jolted strongly enough to send everyone but the jelly-secured Jedi to the deck. A subaltern staggered into the hold while Qin Kao and the guards were struggling to regain their footing.
Commander, we are under attack!
Qin Kao blanched.
Attack? There was no sign of New Republic warships when we entered this system. The aggressors are starfighters, Commander.
Qin Kao swung to Skidder.
They've come for you. But how could they know we were here? Commander,
the junior officer said cautiously.
The Supreme Commander Joker's Virip communication originated on Nalhata.
Qin Kao took a moment to consider it, then scowled in revelation.
Their huts divulged our location.
He squared his shoulders and adjusted the fallen's cloak.
Ready the ship for lightspeed. We'll rendezvous with the fleet in the target system.
And one more thing. See to it that Randa and his bodyguards are confined to their chambers. We'll deal with him once we have the protection of the fleet.
In hut space, Naz Choka, Malik Kar, and Nom Anur stood on the bridge of the Supreme Commander's Helix battleship, watching a Vilip choir feed of the fleet mobilization. A subaltern interrupted their captivation.
Supreme Commander,
he began, saluting.
A message from the commander of the craft sent to collect the captured Jedi. Coral skipper pilots encountered at Galarba report that the Kresh fell under attack by a battle group of New Republic starfighters. Endangered, Commander Qin Kao's vessel fled the fray.
Naz Choka stared at him uncomprehendingly.
Fled to where?
To the target, Supreme Commander, to Fondor.
Naz Choka whirled in alarm to Malik Kar.
How soon may our advance elements reach Fondor?
Soon,
the commander said, letting it go at that.
The Yamosk won't be adequately protected until we arrive,
Naz Choka remarked mostly to himself.
What is the status of the New Republic fleet? Massed at the worlds Komina, Kuat, and Botewi.
And the hyperspace routes linking Botewi to Fondor?
Sown with obstacles.
Naz Choka turned slightly to favor Nom Anur with a faint smile.
It appears that you have been successful in persuading them that we plan to attack Corellia.
Nomanur inclined his head in a nod.
Then it shouldn't matter if we advance the attack.
Ashoka swung to his subaltern.
Apprise all commanders that we launch for Fondor as soon as the final coral skippers are docked.